Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayetchanan. This week, Rabbi David Levenkreuz discusses Vayetchanan. There is a source sheet for this podcast, so please print it out and use it to follow along with Rabbi Levenkreuz. Rabbi David Levenkreuz is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Special Projects. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreuz.
Thank you, Larry. In this week's Parsha Vayetchanan, we have the repetition of the Ten Commandments, which we saw first in Exodus. And whenever I look at these Ten Commandments, or these Dibrot, as they're called in Jewish tradition, the one that fascinates me, bothers me, challenges me, is the last one, the one on jealousy or covetousness or envy or however your translation chooses to translate it. How is this possible? This is a human emotion. The rest of the Ten Commandments deal with beliefs or with actions. This one is actually commanding us a feeling, and such a hard one. Isn't it just naturally part of who we are that occasionally or more than occasionally we're jealous of people? In fact, jealousy can even be helpful. It can tell us what we most want, or it can spur us on to action. How can it be that the Torah is commanding us to feel in a certain way? Is it possible to command feeling? And what's so bad about occasionally being a little envious of something that somebody else has? This is definitely the most inward of the Ten Commandments, and yet we know that the ramifications it can have are very, very strong. If we think of the first sin, the sin of Cain and Abel, of Cain killing Abel, we know that this comes from the jealousy that Cain had for Hevel's sacrifice. So we know it's a hard mitzvah. We know that it is nevertheless something that can have very, very bad ramifications. And we will not be surprised to find out that our sages either try to limit this mitzvah, because they realized it was so hard, or if not limit, at least to explain very clearly what is meant by that. So we're going to be looking at what is the prohibition against jealousy today. What we're also going to look is what can we do about it? Is it possible? Is there a handbook? Is there something we can do about jealousy that our tradition has to teach us? Those of you who know me and know my methodology will know that with a list like this, my yetzer hara, my evil inclination, is pushing me to one point, and that is I love doing comparisons of firsts and lasts, and in this case I think it can be very, very helpful for us to compare the first and the last of the Ten Commandments. The commandments as read in Dvarim 5, verse 6 says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha sheotzeitecha meretz Mitzrayim, I am the Lord your God who took you out of Egypt, mi beit avadim, from the house of bondings. You shall not have any other gods besides me. Lo yiyeh lecha Elohim acherim al panai. I'm God. I took you out of Egypt, and I'm the only God you should be serving. And the last one of the Ten Commandments is, you shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Lo tachmod eshet re'echa, v'lo titaveh bet re'echa sedehu v'avdor, and you should not crave your neighbor's house or field or their slaves, whether being male or female, or their ox or their donkey, and anything that is your neighbor's. In other words, don't tachmod anything that belongs to your neighbor. And when we compare this, we see some very, very interesting things. The first one is dealing with the entire foundation of what Judaism and the Torah is about, belief in God. The second one is the opposite. It's inward. It's talking about motivations. The first one is about God, again, outside. The second one is inside us, desire. First one is talking about the divine source of everything. The last one is where our personal immorality comes from. But perhaps the most important thing, and I think from a psychological viewpoint, this is very, very significant. The first one is telling us that right thought leads to right action. You believe in God. You value the fact that God took us out of Egypt. That will lead to you having right action, whereas the last one about jealousy is saying wrong ideas lead to wrong action. Both of these are needed for an understanding of how a human being lives. On some very, very deeper level, though, I think we can say something even more about comparing the two. It says on the first commandment, Lo yelecha Elohim acharim al panai, you should not have other gods besides me. In a sense, what jealousy is a false god. It's another god. Instead of worshipping God, instead of my feelings being towards God, my feelings are pushing towards me wanting and serving something else. Instead of realizing that I should be devoted to God, I come devoted to a thing. So what is bad? What is bad about coveting? Let's look at the Rambam, but we're going to use the Rambam as a jump-off point to look at other philosophers as well and what they think is the problem with coveting. In the first passage that I've given you from Hilchot Gezeila, chapter 1, verse 9, it says that if you covet anything and you try and do anything about it, v'hichbid alav b'riot v'hefzir bo ad shelakhu mimene, you vexate and you pester a person until you buy it from him, even if you pay a high price for it, aval pi shenatan lo damim rabim, even if you give a high price for it, you are over the lo taseh, which is lo tachmod, that you should not covet. What is wrong about the Rambam, and this is very typical of the Rambam and very typical of much of our tradition, the Rambam takes it out of the realm of feelings. He said it's not the feeling that is wrong. What is that you may do something about it? It is bad because you might turn it into an action. And this is seen similarly in number 111, that Hatava mevi'a lidei chimud, desire leads to coveting and coveting leads to robbery. And it might be that you oppress the person, and this might even lead to bloodshed. Again, for the Rambam, what is important is that jealousy can lead to you doing something else. So the first thing that is bad about it for the Rambam is it might lead to you to do something. But I think in between the lines is that it's bad for the envied person, but in two ways. One is that they might have something stolen or taken from them or vexated. And I think that's said explicitly. I think implicitly there's something else. And that is nobody likes to know that they are envied. It seems strange. Maybe some people like the feeling, and I'm sure there are. Sometimes, hey, I've got something that other people don't have. But if we look at relationships, and if we look at real relationships with people, it's very, very hard to have a good relationship with somebody who envies your success. It's very, very nice to have a relationship with somebody who values your success. So I think it's bad, first of all, because you may do something about it. Secondly, it's bad for the envied person. And thirdly, if we look at the one at number 10, he says, the Rambam says he transgresses a negative commandment as soon as he thinks it in his heart. Kevan shechashav belibo, the moment as soon as you think about it, you have done a negative commandment. I think what's going on over here is it's also bad for the envier. There's something about being a person filled with envy, filled with desire, that means that one does not have a nice or a good life. And these ideas are all reinforced or echoed in what the Ibn Ezra has to say. The Ibn Ezra starts dealing with the issue of what can I do about it? What can I do about the fact that I am envious? And he says that a peasant in his right mind, seeing a beautiful princess, was not dream of lying with her. And so too, he says, an intelligent man will not covet or lust after his neighbor's wife, for knowing that she is forbidden to him, She appears to him far more remote than the princess to the peasant. He says that a wise person, realizes that they do not cover because they realize that everything comes from God. And this, if we go back to the comparison of the first and the last commandment, it makes it even stronger. You know, it says, I, God, am a jealous God. And it's very, very hard, this whole idea. What does it mean for God to be jealous? And isn't that, why is God allowed to be jealous? And we're not allowed to be jealous. And is this one of the things that we have problems with God for? Because how can God, who's the ruler of the universe, be jealous? But I think there's something very powerful coming from the Ibn Ezra. That God didn't mean you to have it. And God is jealous because God has decided who will have what. And therefore, when it says, Ani Elkanah, I am a jealous God, it's saying you think through your jealousy that you can have something which I have not assigned for you, but in fact, I've assigned it for you. And in some way, this reason is very, very similar to the first commandment. It's, you have to accept that there's a certain lot in the world. The world is made in a certain way. And therefore, if you've got something, you're meant to have it. If you don't have something, you're not meant to have it. And this, I think, brings up an idea that the Rambam doesn't say, but which other people do bring up, the Sefer HaChinuch and others, a very, very powerful idea. Very, very often we have the feeling that we have some control over our actions. With the Human Genome Project, we're not even so sure about that anymore. But very, very often we believe we have some or a lot of control over our actions and our choices, but little control of our feelings, that feelings just are. I think this Ibn Ezra is saying something very, very powerful, very, very Jewish, and that is by right thought, by thinking the right thoughts, by having the right bases of one's life, one is able to even have an effect on how one feels. One is able to train one's feelings. It sounds very non-Western in many ways, but if we think, what is the hope of therapy even? People sit in therapy and they speak every week in the hope that eventually speaking about it will lead to them being able to learn to accept things or to hold different beliefs. So I think even in the West, there is the idea that it is possible. We may not have control, full control or over our feelings, but it is possible to change. And for the Ibn Ezra, it is done through understanding that everything comes from God. And when he does that, he quotes Moed Katan 28a, where it says, Amar Rava, Rava says, Chayei b'nai umezonai, life, children, and food, lo b'schuto talia milta, do not depend on merit, ela b'mazle talia milta, but rather they dependent upon mazal. What Chazal meant by mazal, pardon the punning, not the rhyming, what the sages meant by luck, by mazal, was not what we mean it in the West, modern world by it. What they meant by mazal was that there was something written in the stars, or God decided, it could be changed by our actions, but that certain things were assigned for us. And they didn't mean mazal in the sense that we very often use in the modern world, which is, you know, it just happens by chance. It's just luck. It isn't dependent on anything else. And that indeed, in the rabbinic mind, would have been almost heresy. But I would like to claim, and perhaps I'm claiming heresy today, I would like to claim that maybe if we were to read this text, but using the more modern conceptualization of mazal, it could be easier for modern people to accept. And that is, sometimes things just are. Sometimes things just happen. Sometimes one person is lucky enough, we know this, two people have a similar business idea, they're similar in ability, they've both got nice personalities, they both work hard, they're both committed, one person does fantastically well, the other one doesn't. Classically, this is because God decided. But maybe for many of us, we feel very, very often, it's just luck. It just happened, the right person at the right time. And I think sometimes if, as modern people, we're to accept this, without rejecting the idea that it comes from God, but just accepting for reasons we don't know or for no reasons at all, sometimes things just happen and we need to accept that. And if I've got something and somebody else doesn't or vice versa, that's just the way it is. I think this can also very, very often stop a person from feeling jealous. But I think there are other things as well. And one is that I think if you do the other 10 commandments, and I think it's not by chance that this is the last one, if one lives a good life, one treats other people with dignity, one treats people with respect, I think it is possible to train oneself not to be jealous. The real question is, how much space does a person need? Is it possible to love somebody else so much that you do not covet their success? This is a very, very hard question, and different traditions try and answer it in different ways. In the Buddhist tradition, and I don't know if this is really Buddhism or a Western understanding of Buddhism, all of life's pain is due to unfulfilled desires, and to eliminate evil, we get rid of all desires. In other words, for Buddhism, the idea is to get rid of the feeling. For communism, for Marx, you get rid of envy by getting rid of the enviable. Let's make everybody equal when it comes to possessions. Misery comes because of the inequality of wealth, and that leads to an inability to control desires. So for Buddhism works on the feeling, Marx works on what the object is. In Lithuanian Brisker terms, it would be the chefts and the gavra, the thing and the person. Whereas it's very, very interesting, the Talmud says, Kinat sofrim marba chokhma. The jealousy of great scholars increases wisdom. I would like to say that in addition to everything else we've heard about having the right beliefs, about understanding that certain things are part of God's plan, if one can't accept that, maybe understanding that there's a certain amount of randomness in the world, by doing all the Ten Commandments, by training oneself, by working on one's feelings and one's acceptance and one's philosophical basis. In addition to all these different things, I think it's possible to take jealousy and to sublimate it, or take jealousy and to use it for a good thing. If I want something of somebody else, then I should work for it. And this, I think, is where the essence of what jealousy is. I believe it's not the feeling per se that it's so bad. If I see somebody else who has a nice wife or a nice donkey or whatever else the Pasuk said, or a house or a slave or an ox, there's nothing wrong with me wanting an ox or a slave or a wife like that. What's wrong with me is wanting their ox. This is the essence of kleptomania. It's like, I might have something myself, but if somebody else has it, it must be better. I think that the essence of what is wrong about jealousy is not the feeling per se. I think that there is an enormous difference between emulation and the desire for self-improvement versus jealousy and envy. And I think the essence is that a jealous or an envious person wants what belongs to somebody else. They somehow believe that if it belongs to somebody else, it's of greater value. This is the story which many of us know about Zusha, that Reb Zusha says, is crying at his death, and his followers say to him, "What is the matter, Reb Zusha?" And he says, I'm not crying because God will say to me, "Why were you not Avram Avinu?" And I'm not crying because God will say to me, "Why were you not Moshe Rabbeinu?" I'm crying because people will say to me, God will say to me, not people, God will say to me, "Why were you not Zusha?" This is usually interpreted as a paean to be who you are, but I think it can be also interpreted in our context as something else, that one needs to be satisfied with who one is. One needs to accept who one is and who one has, and to know that what I have is of great and tremendous value. My wife, my field, my house, my slave, my relationships, my friends, my children, my spouse, whatever it is that I have, that has a value in and of itself, and it's not as if what somebody else has is better. And that, I think, is the essence of what is bad about jealousy and envy, and that, I do believe, is something it's possible to work on. Let's all try to look at our envy, to see what it has to teach us, to work on becoming better people, and at the same time, to really understand and accept that what we have is of great worth and value, and what God wants us to have. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.